I'm going to invite Julia Peter to come from the Center for Popular Democracy. We were very privileged today to be a part of a little swarming the Capitol today. And she's going to come. See, we were very privileged today to be a part of a little swarming the Capitol today. And she's going to come with just a brief word about that action today. And immediately following that will be the video. Immediately following her remarks will be the video. And immediately following the video will be our own Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Let's receive now Ms. Julia Peter.
Thank you so much for giving me a few moments to speak. I mostly just came to share our gratitude at the Center for Popular Democracy Action. We brought people today to D.C. To stand up for this sham trial. I have to tell you, we had people on buses for 24 hours. We had people take red eyes from across the country with stops, layovers. I think I'm heard we reached 1,000 people today, and yeah. And, you know, aside from the articles of impeachment, we know that the occupant of the White House has betrayed us from day one, from the Muslim bans to kids in cages and so much more. So it's so important that we showed up here today. These senators really think they're going to get away with this sham trial without hearing witnesses, without hearing documents. But the truth is we're watching and we're going to remember, and November is coming. And I just want to say, I was talking to Roz this morning, and I don't think it's a coincidence or an accident, you know, that you all also had programming planned in D.C. today, and you all also traveled here. I think that was kind of meant to be. And when we were able to announce to our folks that the Poor People's Campaign was going to come and Dr. Reverend Barber was going to speak, I can't tell you, like, the electricity that went through our group. It was really a surge of excitement. So thank you so much. I hate that we have to do these fights, but I'm so glad that we get to do it with you. So thank you.
Video.
Our democracy is in trouble.
Our democracy is in trouble.
And we come to demand.
And we come to demand.
Second warning.
Because it's crucial that we make ourselves heard.
We are the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. And we are here. We are poor. We are clergy. And we're here to say to our nation's capital and to the highest court in this land that everybody has a right to live. Everybody has a right to learn. Everybody has a right to love. Everybody has a right to living wages. Everybody has a right to vote. Everybody has a right to thrive. To thrive in
the
society.
Everybody say,
I believe that we will win.
I believe that we will win.
Antonio Bonilla!
We don't fight, and he taught us how to fight.
The poor and the clergy. We read Article 6 of the Kentucky State Constitution. Okay. That says we have a right to free assembly.
We are demanding that we stop the war on our poor.
There are 140 million poor and low-wealth people in this country, almost half of this nation. And any nation that ignores half of its people is in a moral and economic crisis.
So we will.
So we will.
There will be a movement that will break through the con
can bring people together to save the heart and the soul of this democracy and this world.
Everybody
has a right
to live.
Health care.
Everybody.
Don't stop.
The Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, has come up with a series of demands. And I want you to say those demands after I say them.
I know that you are here for the same reasons we all are here. To put our elected official on notice. We demand an immediate restoration of the Voting Rights Act. We demand an end to racist gerrymandering. We demand a reversal of state laws that prevent municipalities from raising minimum wage. We demand a just immigration system. We demand a timely citizenship process that guarantees everyone the right to vote.
We demand an end to military aggression and warmongering. We demand a stop to privatization of military budget and any increase in military spending. We demand a ban on assault rifles and a ban on the easy access of firearms. We demand an end to federal programs that send military equipment into local and state communities. We demand that the call to build a wall at the U.S.-Mexico border be ceased.
We demand a ban on fracking, mountaintop removal, coal mining, coal ash ponds, and offshore drilling. We demand a ban on all new pipelines, refineries, and coal, oil, and gas export terminals.
We demand an immediate implementation of federal and state living wage laws.
We demand
the right for all workers to form and join unions. We demand equal pay for equal work. We demand a guaranteed annual income. We demand fully funded anti-poverty programs that protects the welfare of us all. We demand decent housing. We demand free tuition. We demand free tuition. We demand equity in education. We demand an end to the resegregation of schools. We demand equitable funding for historically black colleges and universities. We demand relief from crushing household, student, and consumer debt. We demand the repeal of the 2017 federal tax law. And we demand that the wealthy and corporations pay their fair share. We believe that we can win. We believe that we can win. We believe that we can win. We believe that everybody
has a right
to live.
To live.
I want want you to know that when hands that once picked cotton join hands of Latinos, join hands of progressive whites, join faith hands and labor hands and Asian hands and Native American hands and poor hands and wealthy hands with a conscience and gay hands and straight hands and trans hands and Christian hands and Jewish hands and Muslim hands and Hindu hands and Buddhist hands, when we all get together, we are an instrument of redemption. When we join hands, we can revive and make sure that the promise of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness and equal protection under the law is never taken away from anybody. So I got a question. Are the rejected ready to revive and declare that this land is your land? This land is my land. The State House to the White House, the rejected are going to demand that this nation never give up on being one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This evening we are gathered to rise together, to demonstrate the power of poor and impacted people banding together, demanding that this country change for the better, to call for a radical redistribution of political and economic power, a revolution of moral values, to show that we must do more. More mobilizing, more organizing, more registering, more educating people for a movement that vote. And we are here to rise together at the mass Poor People's Assembly and Moral March on Washington. And when is that? June 20, 2020. Say it one more time.
June 20, 2020.
So this evening, I want to talk with you about our demands. Demands. The dictionary defines the word demand: to ask for with authority, to claim as a right, an urgent, pressing requirement. And the same dictionary defines power as the ability to act, the capacity to direct the course of events, a right or authority, and a supernatural being, deity, or force. Frederick Douglass, while he was even in this neighborhood saying, agitate, 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 working to abolish slavery, said this about demands: power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. Ida B. Wells, confronting lynching, said, "If this work can arouse the conscience of the American people to a demand for justice for every citizen and punishment by law for the lawless, I shall feel I have done a service." Bayard Rustin, as he was planning the 1963 March on Washington, said, "We demand the segregation be ended in every school district. We demand that we have effective civil rights legislation, and that includes decent housing, integrated education, the right to vote." And right before he was killed, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, together with Cesar Chavez and the National Welfare Rights Organization, coal miners in Kentucky, the Jewish Federation, started to build the Poor People's Campaign, saying this: "Our nettlesome task is to discover how to organize our strength into compelling power so that the government cannot elude our demands. It would be the height of naivete to wait passively until the administration had somehow been infused with such blessings of goodwill that it implored us for our programs." Even the Bible has much to say about demands, especially what God demands of the nations and what God's people must demand of those with power and authority. Micah 6 says, "What does the Lord demand of you? But to do justice, to love kindness, to walk humbly with your God." Leviticus demands that we welcome the immigrant stranger. Deuteronomy demands that nations forgive debts, outlaw slavery, pay people what they deserve. Isaiah demands that our politicians stop passing laws that deprive the poor of their rights. In Luke, John the Baptist demands that the military and ruling authorities stop extorting money, spreading lies. The Gospels tell stories of Jesus turning over tables, engaging in holy disruption, committing himself even unto death to demand justice for the poor. These justice leaders remind us that movements don't just curse the darkness. We don't just awake the nation to what is wrong, but we come together in power with demands. We rise together and claim our rights. As the Poor People's Campaign has been traveling across the nation, weaving together a moral fusion movement of the poor and clergy and activists and organizers, we have heard the demands of poor moms in Detroit and Maine whose children have been taken away because they are homeless, without water. Moms who have demanded, "Take away our poverty, not our children." Longtime residents of St. James Parish and St. John the Parish who are battling Formosa, yet another petrochemical company trying to get a permit to set up shop in Cancer Alley, Louisiana, cry out, "Victory is mine. Victory is mine. We told Formosa to get thee behind, and victory today is mine." Leaders with the Homeless Union of California who assert that we are homeless but not helpless, who demand an end to steamrolling homeless encampments, to end criminalizing the poor when it should be a crime to have poverty in this rich nation. Preachers in Alabama who remind us that poor people are not sinners, but that poverty is a sin against God, that God demands be ended. And farm workers in Immokalee, Florida, who demand dignity and living wages and respect, who say, "No somos tractores. We are not tractors. We are humans." The Poor People's Campaign has a powerful moral agenda, a powerful set of demands. We have a Poor People's Moral Budget where we demonstrate that if the nation cuts the military budget and makes this country safer, if we tax those who can afford it the most and invest in things like healthcare and education and living wage jobs and voting rights, we indeed can end systemic racism. We can end poverty, ecological devastation, militarism, and we can confront this distorted moral narrative that blames poor people for poverty, tries to pit us against each other, and feeds us the lie of scarcity when we live in a land of beautiful abundance. Our movement has found and is showing that we can, in fact, enact our demands now, immediately. We do not have a scarcity of resources. We have a scarcity of political will. But what is powerful enough to change that will is the stories and solutions of the real heroes and heroines of this nation. Some of the 140 million poor and low-wealth people who are part of this new and unsettling force for change. Leaders who, in the words of Nick Smith from the Fight for 15, whose backs are against the wall, and all we can do is push. Well, Washington, D.C., I have the honor of introducing you next to some of these very leaders who are demanding justice, who are banding together to fight for all that is good and right, who can come forward with our stories and our solutions and say, we can win. So I'm going to introduce you to some of the real heroes and heroines of this city and of this nation. We're lucky enough to be here in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, and to have folks who are impacted and fighting back in D.C. and who are fighting back and impacted from states across the country. We say in our work that we stand together because we stand together. So I'm going to invite the testifiers from Washington, D.C. to come up together. And when folk are done telling their stories, we ask that you join us not by clapping, but by saying, somebody has been hurting our people, and it's gone on far too long, and we won't be silent anymore. So I introduce to you Cheryl Brunson, Carla Mendez Guerrero, people from Vendedores Unidos and Many Language One Voice, and Lark Cato. Please come up this evening and share your stories.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Afternoon.
My name is Cheryl Brunson, and I'm with the Tenant Association of Brooklyn Manor in Ward 5.
All right.
The developers are trying to throw us out of our community. They jailing us in our own neighborhood. The legislators allow this to happen to us. The developers are making part of our neighborhood private, and the other part is, I could say this, you can walk on it. But there's no line to divide the private part and the part that's not private. And here's the deal. I've been there 30 plus years. Ain't none of it was private. It was our home. You understand? It was generations and generations of families there. You know, we were like family. You keep my family, they keep our family, we keep each other's family, you feed our family, we feed your family. It was beautiful. The largest places in the world, they're using our property as a cash cow. The mayor gave the developers $47 million to build on our property and put us out of our property. They jailing our teenagers for leaning on the fence, for standing in on the porch, for standing in front of the apartment buildings. It brings tears to my eyes. It's breaking my heart. The neighbors that I used to have are no more there. They're not neighbors anymore because they're homeless. It's really sad. I can't begin to tell you, because I don't have enough time to tell you how many of our neighbors are homeless now. They're blocking off bedrooms to make it 2 bedrooms, 3 bedrooms. They're making 3 bedrooms, 2 bedrooms. It's sad. They're going up on the rent. They're making these apartments market rent. The tenant association work, and we stand strong, and we're going to continue to stand strong to say, hell no, we won't go. All right.
Somebody's been hurting our people, and it's gone on far too long, and we won't be silent anymore.
Okay, good evening. My name's Megan Macraeg. I'm the organizer for the Comité Laboral with Many Languages, One Voice. And I'm here with Byron Lemos and Genesis Lemos. Hey, Genesis, you want to just say hi?
Hi, my name is Genesis.
You want to say hi, Byron? You want to say hi to these nice people? Not yet. Okay. Well, I'm glad we're toning things down a little bit, because people who have been living in the violence and trauma of poverty and police brutality and in the shadow of empire trying to eke out a living here in D.C. are traumatized, you know? And these kids are very brave. So, as a single mama, when I got a phone call from a panicked single mama who was a member of Vendedores Unidos, and that means Vendors United, I responded immediately. Her name is Ana Lemos, and it's the brave mother of these children. And I was a half hour drive away, you know? So I called our friends at Sanctuary DMV and James Plasser and Andrew Hamilton from First Church. Are you guys here? Will you stand up if you're here? Are y'all here? Andrew? James? Okay, it doesn't look like they're here, but without them, we wouldn't have been able to respond, because the police had crushed Genesis to the ground for selling tamales and atol de elote in front of the Panam Bakery in Columbia Heights. They got there first. Enrique, one of our street vendors, had filmed the whole thing. We've been organizing as Vendedores Unidos because vendors are out in the street because they can't pay the rent. Right now, Gloria, who is gonna join us, is hustling to sell tamales because she's gotta pay the rent. But the kids came out. So the police crushed Genesis to the ground, but we were there, and the whole community was family and responded. And we went to the police station, to the children's hospital, where the police continued to try to separate this family. And we fought them off until 1:30 in the morning together. Vendedores Unidos is organizing because street vending is criminal here in D.C. It is a misdemeanor and a $300 ticket at the minimum to be trying to live. And everyone has the right to live. And so these kids were trying to live. And so the children have led the way in the campaign. Vendedores Unidos can now fill up a room with 100 people, of system-impacted people here in the district. They kicked down the doors of DCRA. They're going to get permits to vend, but they're going on to fight to make sure that vending is decriminalized and that working poor people and poor people are not criminalized because they're trying to live. So I was just hoping Byron might want to say a little thing, because since the kids talked at the press conferences for a week straight, it's been really hard to talk in public. And I want to invite Byron maybe to say some small thing if he wants, or Genesis. You want to say some small thing to the people here, Myanmar? No? Not now? Not now? Okay, let's ask your sister. You want to say some small thing, Genesis? Okay, all right. Well, you'll see more of her. She's a lion, and she's fought the police and helped everybody win. And we have to hold those wins close to our heart. So maybe we can just thank them for having hope, despite the fact that they're 15 and 8 years old. Yeah.
So let's give them a great round of applause.
And I'd like to talk about the impact of poverty in my community. Unemployment in our community is so high. Many deaf people have to rely on supplemental security income. But that's not enough for us to live on, because the payments we get are an average of just $771 a month. Who can afford to live on just $771 a month? I myself am the first in my family to go to college. And I do admit I've been struggling financially. My father's income increased recently, but then that resulted in them cutting my financial aid. So his increase in income isn't enough to support my schooling. College is so expensive, I'm overwhelmed. There are actually 120 students at Gallaudet that have had to leave school due to financial issues. They can't afford food, their dorm, their transportation. That's actually 10% of our undergrad student body at Gallaudet. We're trying to follow our dreams, but they seem impossible without support. And it's hard for our community if they leave college. It's even harder for them then to find a job because of the discrimination that we face from employers. And there's also just not enough good paying jobs to help us survive. And I believe this is not right. As a member of this community, well, recently our president has proposed cuts in SSI and SSD. And that means that some of us won't be able to afford health care. I am here because I believe that the Poor People's Campaign is the right battle for us. I believe that we need equality and that we all need the opportunity to live. Thank you.
Been hurting our people, and it's gone on far too long, and we won't be silent anymore.
Reverend Liz, let me interject just a little bit. Now, y'all sound all right, but you don't sound like you have any righteous indignation. And the other folk that don't care, they are loud. And when people come up here and testify, we don't clap. We normally, but we, what they ask us to do is join them in this acclamation. Can we do it? So let's say it like we mean it. Somebody!
Somebody!
Hurting our people!
Hurting our people!
That is going on!
It's gone on!
Far too long!
Far too long!
And we won't be silent!
And we won't be silent!
Anymore!
Anymore! So we are in the nation's capital, and we just heard stories and solutions coming out of Washington, D.C., but we need to make connections to this being the nation's capital and stories happening all over the country like they're happening here. So I want to introduce Wes White, Wenzel Nosey, and Hope out of California, Arizona, and Pennsylvania, who will share what else is happening in this country. I ask folks to come up together because we stand together, because we stand together.
All right. Good evening. My name is Wes White, and I represent the California Homeless Union. We are here because we know that homelessness is the most visible expression of poverty, that our union movement is part of a broader struggle against a system that has failed. In the wealthiest state, human beings are living in chicken coops, on gas station rooftops, on the river bottoms. Our children are being stolen from us simply because we cannot afford housing. Entire families spend the night in cars, running the engines to stay warm and dying from carbon monoxide poisoning as a result. Our camps are being bulldozed and our possessions destroyed on a daily basis. Where I live in Monterey County, 6,000 students do not have a house to live in, and so we are organizing in the schools because you can't do your homework when you don't have a home. Up and down California and everywhere we go, we bring the Poor People's Campaign with us because it's hard to say you're better than someone else or don't have anything in common when you're living on a river bottom or sleeping in a cardboard box. Here is where a new movement is rising. Here is where we are bringing together those who have nothing left to lose. Here is where we say, homeless, not helpless. Power to the Homeless Union. Power to the Poor People's Campaign. Thank you.
Somebody!
Somebody!
Hurting our people!
Hurting our people!
And it's going on!
It's going on!
Far too long!
Far too long!
And we won't be silent!
And we won't be silent!
Anymore!
Ahia, pick out none. She thought she couldn't tear. Gajul leshi to walk kuninya. I give thanks to the Creator for all the blessed gifts that He's placed upon us and also to watch each and every one of us. Today, I sit here and I look at a sign, June 20. 2020. It's a very big day for all of us. For over 500 years, Native Americans have suffered from the beginning to where I stand today and for those yet to come. In the prophecy, there's a time then people will once again come together as brothers and sisters. But we have to hear that calling. We have to be a part of that. So when I look at this, June 20, 2020, it also reminds me of a thing that we're facing. This year in July, our holy mountain in Arizona, the land transfer is going to take place, where the United States government will award a foreign company, a holy place that holds copper and minerals, that 75% will leave this country. And yet today they talk about China, Iran, they talk about all these things across the ocean that yet here were hypocrites. So today when you were marching on the streets and bringing the word, the blessing of a change of tomorrow for our children, I walked the halls of Congress telling them of you and what you are doing. And why Native Americans are pulling with the Poor People's Campaign. Because if the road is spiritual, we must all be on the spiritual road. And it has to be spiritual, because what we are fighting is something deep, deep, deep within people that have misguided us. So when we say there's a deception, that deception is also on you, on how America was first formed. And now it takes us to rebuild that for tomorrow for our children. And there's nothing wrong to tell them the truth, because if our children are told the truth, then better decisions will be made. And those are the responsibilities that we have as people, as human beings, no matter what color we are, no matter what we come from. There are all trails to the top of the mountain. And that trail leads to the same place where our Creator, who is known throughout the world, sits. And those are the responsibility that we have to our children and to the world. Because without Mother Earth, we have nothing. All these arguments are meaningless. But as we put efforts, as we do today and continue to do, then the world will begin to heal, and we will heal from this deception. So again, in everything that we do together is very important. So that June 20, 2020 is very important for all of us, because the more we speak, the more we'll listen and the more we'll join. Yeah. Thank you.
Somebody!
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Hope Koss, and I am a coordinator with Put People First PA from Johnstown, Pennsylvania. Johnstown is one of the poorest towns in the state. I was born into poverty, and I grew up poor. I knew I couldn't afford to go to college, so I joined the military to get access to things like healthcare, education, and housing. Poverty draft is very real. I was then faced with discrimination as a woman in the military and got sent home. I experienced homelessness, having to have different family members and friends take me in when I returned home. My plan was to enlist for at least 6 years, so I had no home to return to when planes fell through. But I knew I had to continue to fight. So after some time, I joined Put People First PA, and there I was introduced to the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. I joined Put People First and the Poor People's Campaign because I could not stand silently by and watch others be hurt by the same poverty draft that so deeply affected me. Currently, in Put People First PA, we are fighting for healthcare as a human right in a state where UPMC, the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, is the largest employer. This $20 billion nonprofit, let me repeat that, $20 billion nonprofit controls many of the hospitals across the state, a bevy of specialists, and even an insurance company bearing its name. They buy failing rural hospitals under the pretense of reviving them, and they let them fail so they can rezone the property and resell it, making millions, while the residents in the area who relied on those hospitals die because they cannot afford to travel to the next town to gain access to the healthcare that they need. In less than a year, they did this to the residents of Lancaster and more recently, Sunbury, Pennsylvania. This trend cannot continue because folks are paying with their lives. So on June 20th, 2020, Pennsylvania will join the Moral March on Washington, D.C. to fight for all of those who have been harmed by this so we can save our lives.
Somebody's been hurting our people,
and
it's gone on far too long,
and we won't be silent anymore.
If you're able to, would you stand with me?
Somebody is hurting our families.
And it's gone on far too long. Yes, it's gone on far too long. It's gone on far too long. Somebody is hurting our families, and it's gone on far too long. And we won't be silent. No, we won't be silent anymore. Somebody is hurting our children, and it's gone on far too long. Yes, it's gone on far too long. I tell you that it's gone on far too long. Oh, somebody is hurting our children, and it's gone on far too long. And we won't be silent. We won't be silent anymore. Now, have you heard? Somebody is poisoning the water.
That's it.
And it's gone on far too long. Yes, it's gone on far too long. I tell you, it's gone on far too long. Oh, somebody is poisoning the water, and it's gone on far too long. Y'all, we can't be silent. We can't be silent anymore. Oh, somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on. Yes, it's gone on. I tell you, it's gone on. Oh, somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on. Yeah, and we won't be silent anymore. Well, if we've been just a little too quiet, you know it's gone on. Yes, it's gone on. I tell you, it's gone on. Oh, if we've been just a little too quiet, you know it's gone on. And we won't be silent anymore.
Have you heard? Somebody's taking our health care, and it's gone on. Yes, it's gone on. Oh, it's gone on. Oh, somebody's taking our health care, and it's gone on. And we won't be silent anymore. Oh, somebody's hurting our babies, and it's gone on. Oh, it's gone on. I tell you, it's gone on. Oh, somebody's hurting our babies, and it's gone on. And we won't be silent anymore. And we won't be silent anymore. And we won't be silent anymore. We won't be silent. We won't be silent anymore. No, we won't. We won't be silent anymore. Here's what I want you to do without the music, without the music. And we won't be silent anymore. Stay right there with that. Sing that again. And we won't be silent anymore. Come on and sing that again. We won't be silent. We won't be silent anymore. Last time, we won't be silent. And we won't be silent anymore.
Let's thank our Theo musicologist, Ms. Yara Allen, and all of our testifiers who are here tonight. You know, whenever I come in the door, our first person I go to is Yara, and I say, what's the feel of the room? You can bring the music down. I just say, what's the feel of the room? Because a true theomusicologist may sing a song five or six different ways, depending on the feel of the room. And I watched her when she came out, and she said, I'm not sure, I'm thinking. But I could tell that when she was singing tonight, she took us to the mourner's bench. Because there ought to be a mourning in America. I didn't say a M-O-R-N-I-N-G, but M-O-U-R. There ought to be a mourning. When we hear these stories, that's why we tell folk, don't clap like it's something to be celebrated. When you hear what people are facing, our hearts should mourn, our eyes should tear up, our feet should prepare to march, our mouths should swing wide open. To even think we got to have a homeless union in America. So, Yara, I want to thank you tonight for being always faithful to the moment. Faithful to the moment. And faithful to calling us through music where we ought to be as we face this moment. It's not surprising to me that you would mourn here tonight to begin that song, because you're standing beside Brother Winslow, and that same mourning spirit came over you when we were standing at his mother's mountain. There is a scripture that says, thank you so much. There's a scripture that says, blessed are they that mourn. Yes, yes. Blessed are they who care so deeply that you cannot ignore other people's pain. And cursed are those, then, who can live life unconcerned. I'm honored tonight, Reverend Huber, to be here at this church. Been with your bishop in Atlanta. I'm so thankful to be here tonight with Reverend Jackson and Rob Stevens, Reverend Rob Stevens, who are leading our organizing team at offices right here in D.C. Let's give it up for Dr. Jackson. Now, we don't allow any politicians on our stage for, not because we hate politicians, we actually are very political. We're just nonpartisan. And we know we have work to do on both parties, maybe one more than the other, but on both parties. And the reason we know that is because our inside folk tell us we got work to do. And they tell us that they need more leverage. But tonight, I do want to take a moment to acknowledge two that I see. I might get to three. Okay. But I'm acknowledged too that I know. I see the Julianne over there. That's Malva over there. She ought to be in Congress. In fact, she ought to have Senator McConnell's job, but that's another. Yeah, I got her. But I want to do something specific. My team is helping me because they know I'm sorry. I got problems. I really do. But on this one, I know what I'm doing. And that is, I want to acknowledge two sisters that I've known. Who have been midwives of justice, like Shipra and Pua, and they have kept alive the call for the Congress to deal with poverty, even after being ignored year after year, sometimes by their own party. See, I'm gonna just say it like it ought to be said. But we thank God for Barbara Lee and Sheila Jackson Lee for keeping alive the call that this nation is not what it ought to be, and particularly Barbara Lee, that this nation cannot be what it ought to be until we deal with the issue of poverty. For 20-some years, she's been saying that. And we also know that when everybody else said we ought to go to Iraq and Afghanistan, Barbara Lee said, I don't know much, but I know a dead cat is on the line somewhere. And now all these years later, all this revelation is proving that though she was castigated and people wanted to kill her, the truth has come always full circle and proved that she was right to stand up to America's military power. Sometimes you gotta stand on what you believe. My grandma said, what you believe. And we certainly want to thank Sister Lawrence as well for being here on tonight. Now, I don't come in late because I'm just late. I'm nursing a knee, trying to make it through this whole piece. We all battle with something. Everybody has some challenge. Moses couldn't talk. Elijah had bits of depression and bipolarism. Jesus was acquainted with sorrow. Dr. King could hardly breathe after he was stabbed by a black woman. Harriet Tubman had epileptic fits, but those things are no excuses for us not to use our lives for the benefit of others. So I beg your pardon when we have to sometimes rest a little bit in order to run a little bit further. Wednesday of last week, I want to come at this poverty thing a little different tonight, Liz. And isn't Liz Theo Harris powerful, our co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign? My sister beloved. Wednesday of last week, before the House managers began their opening statements in the impeachment trial of Donald J. Trump, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell stood by his desk on the Senate floor and conferred at length with White House counsel Pat Capone. When Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer noticed their excited gestures from across the aisle, he cupped a hand to his ear and made a show of trying to listen in. Members of the media who were confined to the press gallery took note and chuckled. Let me have the king. The acquittal Trump had demanded of Senate Republicans was all but assured, and McConnell felt no need to pretend impartiality. But the corruption that is regularly laughed off in our age of political cynicism makes me shudder as the son of civil rights activists who risked their lives to expand American democracy in the 20th century. The coordinated cover-up, somebody say cover-up, we are witnessing as 53 senators conspire to facilitate Trump's obstruction of Congress is deeply troubling to anyone who knows the long history of Southern courthouses, Congressman Lee, where district attorneys openly coordinated with all-white juries and corrupt judges to cover up acts of racial terror. This is maybe, Yara, why we must mourn. With patience and decorum, Mitch McConnell has brought Southern justice to the United States Senate in the 21st century. Now, what does that mean? It means it's the kind of justice we saw, or injustice we saw, in 1955. When racial terror surged in response to the Supreme Court Brown decision, the white men who brutally murdered Emmett Till were acquitted by an all-white jury. The prosecutor, the judge, and the local media worked in tandem to cover up the truth. And then the perpetrators, who were protected against double jeopardy, they went through a trial, but it was already decided from the beginning. And then they were protected against double jeopardy. And after they were assured of their double jeopardy, then the evidence came out and they admitted their guilt to Look magazine. We've seen this before, and Senate Leader McConnell is bringing Southern justice to the United States Senate. In the summer of 1964, when three civil rights workers disappeared while investigating a church burning in Philadelphia, Mississippi, local authorities told the FBI their investigations had found nothing but hundreds of college students from the nation's elite universities had turned the nation's attention on Mississippi that Freedom Summer, and the FBI could not simply move on as usual. They spent the entire summer combing the area for more evidence, and in the end, they found a literal cover-up. Andrew Goodman, Mickey Schwaner, James Cheney had been murdered and buried in a local dam as a part of a conspiracy. And they found other bodies in the same dam. The conspiracy had included the Ku Klux Klan, the Philadelphia Police Department, the Neshoba County Sheriff's Department, the local prosecutors, the judges, and in 2 months of investigation to expose one cover-up, the federal authorities found, it took the federal government to undo the cover-up and find 8 other African Americans, but they were never acquitted of state-based murder charges because there was a cover-up. We who are heirs of America's civil rights struggle
know how fragile and hard won our multi-ethnic democracy is. For generations after the end of Reconstruction, anybody who believed, who dared to believe that the 13th, 14th, 15th Amendments guaranteed them rights of all full citizenship, they were subject to terrorism by local law enforcement. If a crime was committed to rig the next election, it was covered up. This was the everyday practice of Southern justice under Jim Crow. If somebody was lynched, it was covered up. People like John Lewis, who we ought pray for in these days, who voted as a member of the House to impeach Donald Trump for seeking foreign help to rig the 2020 elections, went to jail and faced beatings in the 1960s to ensure free and fair elections. And a half century later, we have fewer voting rights protections in America than we did in 1965 when the Voting Rights Act was signed into law because of the gutting of Section 5. And as the majority leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, covered up the voter suppression efforts that guaranteed him a Senate majority long before he was called to cover up for Donald Trump's efforts to rig the next election. Americans remember from the Nixon impeachment that the cover-up is evidence of the crime. But it is more than that. Time and time again, the civil rights movement has learned that the cost of the cover-up is democracy itself. When the people who have power can abuse that power to influence elections and suppress the electoral power of those who would challenge them and to influence how trials happen, we do not have a democracy, a representative democracy. Instead, what we have is Southern justice covering up for minority rule. But if we who have been denied full citizenship in the nation knows the cost of cover-up, we also know the power of moral movements to tap a greater power to push America toward a more perfect union. Slaveholders invested everything they had to cover up the cries, Robin, of chattel slavery. Jim Crow did everything it knew to cover up the immorality of separate but equal. And for a long time, it looked like they had all the votes and all the courts and all the legislation. But movements of people committed to the truth did not submit to the cover-up. They kept believing and building on the conviction that the moral arc of the universe pulls off the covers. And they uncovered the lies that crippled democracy in their day. And our present moral crisis demands nothing less of us. And so as I come here tonight, I wanted to start by reading the moment we're in, Dr. Malvo, and say, when it comes to poverty, there is and has been a cover-up. When it comes to how we have what we have now leading our nation and the extremism that has taken over, there has been a cover-up. When it comes to how we talk about systemic racism, systemic poverty, ecological devastation, the war economy, and the false moral narrative of religious nationalism, there has been a cover-up. That is why the first role of this campaign is to pull back the covers. You know, people keep talking about how we got here in the current reality, in the current administration. Now, that does not mean that the issue of poverty did not show up until this administration. That would be a cover-up. For 50 years, we've not seen any focus, really, on the issue of poverty. But how did we get here? And some say we got here just because of one person whose name starts with T and ends with P. But the reality is, here's pulling back the cover. The poverty, war on poverty, was shut down when Nixon, began to get shut down when Nixon was elected. And he put Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld over the offices that handled the issues of poverty and economic development. But Nixon got courage to run when George Wallace landed 30% of the votes cast in the Indiana primary in 1964, George Wallace. And all he had in Indiana was two Ku Klux Klansmen that ran a shoestring campaign out of a service station phone booth. I know you Northerners, or you think you're in the North in D.C., you're really not. But I know you Northerners like to talk about the South. But in Maryland's Democratic primary in 1964, George Wallace won 16 of the state's 23 counties in Maryland, and 43% of the final tally. And he said, without the nigger block vote, I would have won the whole thing. From Wallace's surprising performance, Republican George H.W. Bush decided to run for the Senate. He'd never run before, held elective office. And in 1964, beginning his race, he declared he was opposed to the Civil Rights Act of 64, saying that it trampled upon the Constitution. And he said the new Civil Rights Act was passed to protect the 14% of the people, but I'm worried about the 86%. To say this is just about Trump and it started with Trump is a cover-up. They launched the Southern Strategy when many former Democrats became Republicans, and their goal was what Lee Atwater called, what they call positive polarization. Positive polarization. Lee Atwater would talk about it later, but Kevin, they called it positive polarization. The goal of positive polarization was to turn, stop the poor people's campaign, stop the war on poverty, and turn poor whites against poor blacks and poor Latinos. Positive polarization. They called it a kinder, gentler white supremacy. Paving the way for the campaign of Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan, the Bushes, and Trump. What we see now going on, don't let anybody tell you that the problem is just in Trump. Yes, he has maybe taken some of it in recent days to a national history, but there is not some glory day behind us when this was not existent. The reality is, as our dear sister at Princeton says, Nell Painter, Trump is just the most recent iconography of a too often repeated American reality. Long before Trump mastered the con of the Southern strategy, he had an audience that had been cultivated for 50 years. And you gotta know this history, and the goal of this history, to split black and white and brown poor people from one another. Every time black and white and brown and native poor people have the power to come together and shift the political calculus and build the beloved community. In 1965, at the end of the Selma to Montgomery March, Dr. King spoke on that. We often don't talk about it. We talk about, I have a dream, as though that's all he said. We don't too often don't deal with the nightmarish realities he talked about. In 65, standing on the Alabama State Courthouse, he said, the aristocracy and the bourbon class has always sought to divide poor people. And every time there is the potential for poor whites and poor blacks and brown people to come together, they feed poor whites Jim Crow, a psychological bird that they feed when their money cannot buy, paraphrase, food for their stomachs. They feed Jim Crow. And they feed it because they fear the possibility of rooms that look like this and the new political calculus they represent. So my brothers and sisters, we must understand that there has and there is cover-up. Another cover-up is that since the U.S. Supreme Court gutted the Voting Rights Act in 2013, even before then, in 2010, 20-some states had passed racist voter suppression laws. And even with that record in 2013, the Supreme Court, in a split vote, gutted the Voting Rights Act. What has happened since 2013? 868, that's how many fewer voting sites we've had in black, brown, and poor communities since 2016. 22, that's the number of states that have passed voter suppression laws since 2010. Those numbers represent 44 senators and nearly 50% of the House of Representatives. And more than 6 years and 2,000 days, that's how long it's been since the Supreme Court gutted Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, and the Congress has had the power to fix it. Over 2,000 days, nearly 6 years, is how long, over 6 years, is how long McConnell has blocked fixing the Voting Rights Act. Let me put that in context for you. We called Strom Thurmond a racist, and he only filibustered the Civil Rights Act of 57 for 24 hours. McConnell has filibustered fixing the Voting Rights Act for over 2,000 days. What does that mean? We talk about Trump winning Wisconsin by 30,000 votes, but there were 250,000 votes suppressed in Wisconsin. In North Carolina in 2016, there were 150 fewer sites doing early voting. And Trump only won by less than 160,000 votes, and 500,000 African Americans that could vote did not vote. This is the election hacking that no one wants to talk about. I don't know how much help Trump got from Russia, but it is manifestly clear that he could not have stolen the election without the help of systemic racism. And here is the final cover-up, that voter suppression is just about black folk and brown folk. When in reality, voter suppression, racist voter suppression, racism itself, is not just hatred of black folk, it is hatred of democracy itself. Here is how it connects to a poor people's campaign. Because all of the politicians who get elected by racist voter suppression, once they get elected, they pass or block policies that hurt mostly poor white people. Because there's 66 million poor white people in this nation. 30% of white people. There are 26 million black people, 61% of black people. But if you take a map and take a map of all the states that are voter suppression states and then overlay that map with poverty and women in poverty and children in poverty, you will find that the very people who run on racism, once they get elected, what they cover up from the very people that vote for them is that they pass policies that hurt them. And denying or suppressing the right to vote, my brothers and sisters, is not just about racism, it is about theology. Because when you deny the right to vote, and Brother Winslow is constantly telling us why we have to remain spiritual, when you deny the right to vote, we only give the right to vote in this country to people. We don't give it to pets, parakeets, and puppies. So if you deny my right to vote, you are saying I'm not a people. Now, I know that's bad English, but it's good theology. You're saying I'm not a people, or I'm not a person. Therefore, you are challenging the imago Dei in me. Huh? That's why this, in Hebrew, the same word for vote and voice is the same word. Y'all hear what I'm saying? And so when you suppress the right to vote, you are literally saying that the people who you are suppressing, they are not of the same creation and the same humanity as you are. Voter suppressors are idolaters who worship themselves and worship their greed and worship their God over the rights of others. That is why 2,600 years ago, Isaiah said, "Woe unto those who legislate evil and rob the poor of their rights and make women and children their prey." There's a cover-up. And there's a cover-up that racism is just about black folk. No, racism is what's happening to my Apache brothers and sisters and indigenous brothers. So racism is what's happening to my Latino brothers and sisters. But then there's another cover-up, and that is poverty. You know, in the richest nation in the history of the world, we don't like to talk about the fact that above a third of our population is crippled by poverty and low wealth. Republicans racialize poverty, and too often Democrats run from poverty or try to come up with some pseudonym, some way of talking about poverty without saying the word, like those who are striving to enter the middle class. No, some folk are poor and low wealth, or the working poor, as though poor folk aren't working. Former Secretary of Labor Robert Wright said the ranks of the working poor, he said, here's the cover up, are growing because wages at the bottom have dropped, adjusted for inflation, and with increasing numbers of Americans taking low wage jobs in retail, sales, restaurants, hotels, hospitals, childcare, elder care, and other personal services, the pay at the bottom fifth is falling. At the same time, the real value of the federal minimum wage is lower today than it was 25 years ago. That's the cover-up. The cover-up. In fact, if the federal minimum wage had kept pace with inflation, we wouldn't be fighting for 15 in a union, because the federal minimum wage would be $22 an hour. That's the cover-up. The cover-up is that poverty, and we're working, thank you, Barbara, and thank others of you who have agreed with us and stopped using that thing term, there are 40 million poor folk in this country. That's not true. All of the data tells us that's not true. When you look at poverty, when you look at those that would be in poverty without supplemental issues, when you look at living wages, there are 140 million poor and low-wealth people in this country, 43% of the nation, almost half. And it is a cover-up to say anything else. There are 250,000 people that die every year from poverty. 700 people died today from poverty and low wealth. 7 people died from vaping. And we got a hearing and a presidential meeting and called it a national emergency, while 700 people died a day, and we've not yet declared an emergency and a moral crisis. We could cut the military budget by half. It's $700 billion right now. We could cut it to $350, and we would still have more in that budget than Iraq, Iran, Russia, North Korea, and China combined. And most of the money is not even going to help the soldiers, because the average combat soldier is working for poverty wages. Poverty wages. Many of them have to get food stamps. It's going to the military contractors that make $19, $20, and $21 million a year. And that's the cover up. The cover up. Cover up. Since the Great Recession has benefited our wealthiest member. We talk about we can't guarantee folk a basic income. Well, we guarantee Wall Street bailouts. We actually come up with phrases, too big to fail. Too big to fail. And that means you get to cheat, drop Wall Street, ruin a company, and then get our free money to come back all over again. The 21st century, the divide between the rich and poor in this country has grown exponentially. The top 0.1% of income earners in America make 198 times more than the bottom 90%. And another cover-up is when folk come on and say, well, we have changed the rate of poverty by 2%. And they 2% of 140 million, and you're happy? 10% would still be plus 120 million people. It is amazing how we discount the poor, and dismiss the poor. The cover-up is right here when we invite people from other countries to visit the White House or the Congress. We make sure they don't drive in certain parts of D.C. because it would ruin our moral standing. cover-up is that in D.C., 50% of the folk in D.C. are poor, and they don't even have the right to vote for a senator or a member of the United States House of Representatives. In D.C., in our nation's capital, 64% of children are poor and low wealth. 35,000 people in the nation's capital where every congressperson gets free health care. Now, I was challenged on that. I said that and the congressperson said, no, we don't. We pay it. I said, with what? They said, our salary. I said, and who gives you your salary? And they said, well, we raise our salary. I said, well, I already know that. You raise it all the time. But where does it come from? The tax dollars. So do you have free health care? No, because we pay your salary, you pay for your health care, it's our health care, and then you don't want your constituents to have the same thing that you have. That is ungodly. And in the nation's capital, 35,000 people don't have health insurance. In the nation's capital, you have to work 107 hours a week on a minimum wage job to earn a basic apartment. And 7,000 people are homeless. That's the cover up. And it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. It's time. The second thing I want to tell you, not only is there a cover up, we must testify now. We got to tell the truth that the lie of scarcity is a lie. We have the money, we just don't have the mercy. We have the cash, we just don't have the conscience. Huh? We have what we need, we just don't have the political will, and we will never have it until poor people and religious leaders and moral leaders and their allies stand up and demand a different direction in America. It's time to testify. And then it's time to testify and time to help many people stop just talking about the cost to fix poverty. What is the cost of poverty? Child poverty alone cost us $1 trillion in economic growth if we ended child poverty. And thank God for the Children's Defense Fund and our dear sister who has taught us just 2% of the federal government put toward systems that work could immediately reduce child poverty by 60%. When you hold down the poor, you hold down America. It's time for us to testify. It's time for us to testify and put poor people and low wealth people and their stories in front of the nation and let them tell it. And that's why we come in June 2020. We're not coming June 2020 for a bunch of people to come and pontificate about the poor. We're coming to build a stage for the poor and low wealth people to stand before this nation and testify themselves, to show America herself, to show America white people and black people and brown people and red people and yellow people and gay people and straight people and urban people and rural people and Appalachian people and Mississippi Delta people and Carolina people and California people. We are coming, rising together to say we will not be ignored anymore. We're coming not just for one event, but to say a movement has begun. We're coming with 43 coordinated, state coordinated committees, because this time you can't kill one of us and stop nothing. This time it's gonna be all of us coming. All of us coming. All of us coming. We've learned from your evil. We've learned from the past. So now we're organizing together and we're building from the bottom up. You won't be able to pull your money back and we won't be able to stand. We're coming! And we're gonna announce on June 20 that yes, we're gonna mobilize for the election, but we're gonna mobilize for after the election and then another election, because we're building a movement. We're registering people for the movement who vote. We're building power. We're gonna change the narrative. America, your heart will be broken. Your conscience will be seared. And we will show you a way out if you let us. But we will not be silent anymore. And so the third thing is, my brothers and sisters, not only is there a cover-up, and not only must we testify, we understand that together is the only way. You know, there's a psalm in the Bible, Brother Winslow, and it says this, Brother Alvin, it says, the stone that the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. And what we know in history is that every time people come together, that's when change takes place. If I had time, but I don't have time, I got to catch a train to New York. If I had time, I would tell you how in the Bible, every time folk came together, like Moses and his rod and the people, Pharaohs had to come down. If I had time. If I had time, I would tell you in history that it looked like slavery had the last word. But when Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass and Quakers and white evangelicals got together, they brought slavery down. If I had time. If I had time, I would tell you how I am the result of fusion. When black folk married Tuscarora Indians and we came together and built a whole community of free Negroes. If I had time. But I don't have time to do all that, so let me just make it personal. They told me about 20-some years ago that I'd never walk again. They said I'd never get out of a wheelchair. They said I'd be on a walker for the rest of my life. I was 30 years old, and I had always depended on my legs. I used to leg press about 600 pounds, but I woke up one morning and could not move. I spent 3 months in the hospital, them trying to figure out what I had. They found out that because of the fusion of my reality, I had a certain gene, and it had produced something called ankylosing spondylitis, and it was affecting my back, infecting my neck, and doing funny stuff to my nervous system, and they said you might not ever get up again. They told me to call and have a session with the social worker about being put in a nursing home. They said they couldn't operate on the hip because the arthritis would just get worse and come somewhere else. They told me to call my church and tell my church that I wasn't going to pastor anymore. And I went into depression. I don't talk about this often, but I went into depression. And then one night a woman came in my room and she didn't have any legs, and she got beside my bed and she said, I want to talk to your son. I said, you better leave me alone. She said, well, you can't run. You can't go nowhere. And so I'm going to talk to you anyway. She talked to me. She laid her hands on me. She said, son, there's stuff for you to do, and you're going to have to learn to do it crippled. God isn't going to let you retire just because you're crippled. She went out of my room. The next morning, I got up. I asked the doctors. I said, there's a woman that came in my room. I need to talk to her. They said, what was her name? I said, I don't know her name, but she's an amputee. They said, we don't have any amputees on this floor. I checked around. I said, I thought she said her name was Watson. They checked the list. They didn't have a Watson on the roll in the hospital. So I looked that up to heaven, and I decided that God sent me an amputated angel to tell me that you can't stay down even if you want to. So I left the hospital, and for 12 years I was in a wheelchair, and 12 years I was on a walker, and 12 years I preached, and the only time I didn't hurt was when I was preaching. That's why I'm long-winded right now. For 12 years I went and did baptism. For 12 years I began to move around, and then the Lord spoke to me and said, stand up with other folk, fight with other folk that are crippled from injustice and poverty. And all I know is over those 12 years my doctor got together, and my nurses got together, and my swim coach got together, and my therapist got together, and my church got together, and the prayer warriors got together, and my fasting got together, and my praying got together. And I can shout a little bit now, because when we get together, there is nothing we can't do. Help me, somebody, preach. When we all get together, what a day of justice it will be. It's time for us to get together. Come on. Let's get together. When we get together, we can turn this nation around. When we get together, we can bring down injustice. When we get together and get together real tight, we can change the consciousness of this nation. And when we get together, what a day! What a day! What a day! What a day! What a day of justice it will be when we get together. That is why we are being called in this moment
to get together all across the aisle, hook up with somebody. Don't grab the hand though, because that's transactional. All they got to do is let the hand go. Hook up in the elbow, make it hard for them. Look at them and say, I got you now. We're together now. And you aren't going anywhere till we win. We're gonna stand together. There's an army rising to break every chain. And there's a song that says it's not the waking, it's the rising. I love that a lot of folk have said we've got to get woke, but you got to do something else besides just get woke. You got to get up. Because you can be woke and still in your bed. You can be woke and still think you can change the world with text messages. No, no, my baby. You have to put a body on it in the street, in the legislative halls, and in the courts. And so tonight, there's an army rising, and we're going to be together. I can't let you go now, Brother Winslow. I didn't know you when I was born, but I know you now. Can't let you go now, Liz. You didn't come out the same womb, but we've been birthed together for this movement. Huh? And so I need to know, who's the oldest person while the organist plays soft? Who's the oldest person here tonight? 80? Is there an 80-year-old person here? Is there 85? 85? Two 80-year-olds, come up here. I need you. And then I need the youngest person. The youngest person, is there a baby in the house? Is there a baby in the house? Shh, shh, shh. Is there 80? Come here. I need to ask y'all something. We want in this movement to ask your forgiveness. Because most of us in here are living off of other people's struggles. And many of you all who are 80 and 85, y'all fought too hard. You fought too hard. You were here when the first one started. And you fought too hard. And the truth is, sometimes we've let you down. We haven't kept the fight. We got to stop just blaming folk who got elected and start looking at what is it that we have to do. And I want to ask you, two things. Will you forgive us? And will you suit up one more time? I just need to know, will you suit up one more time? Now, is there a child here tonight? Two, one, bring her over here. Come on, where is she? Bring her here. Where is she? Let's see, come here, baby. How old are you?
I'm 11.
You're 11. Listen, we're getting ready to mess in your future, right? And we need you to be with us. We need you to be, but we want to know, do we have the permission to fight for your life to be better?
Yes.
We do? Say it right there.
Yes.
Okay. Do we have permission to take on the injustices so that you won't have to fight some of the same things that we're fighting now?
Yes.
Do we have your permission to fight that every child does not have to suffer in poverty?
Yes.
And in low wealth?
Yes.
And will you make it present? Will you come on the 20th so we can look out there and see? We're not just fighting for ourselves. But we're fighting for you and the whole generation of you that are yet unborn. Will you? Thank you so much. Based on these brothers and sisters accepting our forgiveness and choosing to suit up one more time, and based on these babies giving us permission to change their future, to mess in their future, and hopefully make it better than it is now, and to shift this nation, with your permission, we now launch and are more committed to June 20, 2020 and beyond, a mass poor people's assembly and a moral march on Washington. And let it be said that once we rise, we will never, ever fall back again. God bless you.
So we have a call to action from our brothers and sisters here in Washington, D.C. So let us hear that call.
Thank you.
So my name is Zilla Wesley. I'm one of the chairs of the Poor People's Campaign for Washington, D.C. thank you. No, really, thank you for coming out, because people believe this wouldn't happen. People believe this movement couldn't happen here in D.C. because we were so nonprofit. All you think of is Capitol Hill, but there are people here hurting. And we are here to rise up together. We're going to hear from one of our faith leaders from D.C.'s Poor People's Campaign, Reverend Hagler.
And I want to thank all of you for being here tonight. I particularly want to thank Reverend William Barber and Reverend Liz Theo Harris for bringing this movement here to Washington, D.C. And it's important, as he lifted up this image for us tonight, this image of rising up and staying up, we got to admit that those of us who live in Washington, D.C., we know how crucial the battle is. One, don't have a vote. Number two, everything the federal government wants to do, they do in D.C. as their little personal petri dish, from bringing vouchers to bringing public charter schools to doing everything to continue to dispossess the people from D.C. There's neighborhoods here, there's communities here, but one thing is happening is that the black and brown and poor people are being forced out of D.C. by the profiteers, the developers, and the politicians are doing nothing to make sure that the residents are able to stay in place, and that's what we gotta stand up and fight against, this kind of displacement that is going on. Displacement in the neighborhoods, but displacement all over the country. Because one of the things that we have to deal with are these folks who continue to try to make billions of dollars at the expense of poor and working class communities, and that's got to stop. Right now, we're trying to bring a halfway house, into Washington, D.C. And the politicians don't want a halfway house in D.C. Though in the system that people went into the federal system in D.C., they went all over the country. They were incarcerated all over the country. And now as they try to come home, the politicians don't want them to come home. And that's a statement not only to those returning citizens, but it's a statement to those who live in the community that they're trying to remove us all. But we're not going anywhere. We're going to stand and continue to stand as people of goodwill and conscience. Let me just finish by saying, I want to thank WPFW and WBAI, the Pacifica Network, who has covered this live. And they've been in every time that we've been engaged, they've come out and they have continued to broadcast wherever we were to the Washington, D.C., the New York community, 89.3 FM, WPFW, WBAI, thank you so much.
So now, siblings, I have a call of action for us. If you are ready to rise up and organize and continue to move forward to help mobilize for June 2020 and really, really be a call, be a roar to Capitol Hill, which is right here, you know? So if we are really gonna show people that we are here and we are serious and we are ready to mobilize, please join me. If you haven't joined the campaign already, please sign a pledge card, okay? If not, save the date, okay? February 22nd, we are doing a lunch planning meeting to get groups upon groups upon groups and issue upon issue to work together, to build together for June 2020 and beyond, because this is something serious. People are hurting, people are dying in our streets every day, and if we don't stand up and do nothing, then what's gonna happen? Thank you.
Stand up and sing us ourselves out. We want to thank everyone for being here this evening. Because indeed there is an army rising up here in Washington, D.C.